Welcome to Sausage on a Fork, a podcast dedicated to the UK's longest-running children's drama programme, Grange Hill. My name's Neil, and in each episode, I'll interview a former cast member about their life before, during, and after their time on the programme. Okay, welcome to the latest episode of Sausage on a Fork, and I am absolutely delighted to say that I have been joined for this episode by none other than Renee Alperstein, who played Pamela Cartwright. Renee, welcome to Sausage on a Fork.
Well, thank you very much, Neil. I know it's been a hugely long time coming, and I think probably we were just saying that it's probably been a year and a half since you first contacted me or found where I was. And we call my husband the silent Rottweiler, right. Which is he just basically, when he wants to do something, he just goes for it, and he does not stop very quietly till he gets to the end. And I really think he's found his match in you. Well done for your tenacity.
It was actually the first contact was from Lance to me, and then when he told me who his wife was, that was it. I was like, right, you know, I'm going to get it on the podcast.
Well, I've got to say, your persistence has been massively impressive, as has been your research.
Thank you. Well, like I say, thank you so much for coming on. And what we'll do, Renee, is we'll start the way we start every episode. And if you can tell us how you first got into acting.
Okay, so where should we start? So I was born singing and dancing and tap dancing and loving being the centre of attention, and would at the drop of a hat stand on a table and sing and dance to whoever was prepared to listen. My mother, who sadly passed away 3 years ago, grew up in South Africa, and she was a very talented ballerina, and her very Victorian father prevented her from coming to the UK, where she'd won a place to join the Royal Ballet School. And it massively demotivated her. And she actually, sadly, never really found, although married and I think enjoyed her life with her children and grandchildren when they emigrated to the UK, was incredibly demotivated. So when at 10 years old, I begged my parents, can I please go to a theatre school? I think part of the reason that she pushed for it was because she felt that she hadn't been allowed to do it. Right. So they did some research. They said, okay, if you get into Italia Conti, you can go, because they were the only theatre school that had a vaguely good academic record. You can go. And I, long story short, I auditioned, I got in, and I am so grateful to them that they let me go, because it was a huge part of who I was. Yeah. It allowed me to really explore and express that part of me. And although I had a very short and intense career, it was extremely fulfilling, and it was a huge part of who I am today. It gave me massive confidence. Yeah. I really, you know, subsequently when I left the business and went into the world of sort of work, of business, I was able to kind of talk my way into positions that really I shouldn't have had. Right. And I was far too underqualified for, but it gave me a huge amount of confidence. And it also allowed me, this is partly from where I came from, but the confidence that I got from being at a theatre school allowed me to be able to talk to, I think that I could talk to a tramp on the street, uh-huh, or I could talk to royalty, right, and feel very confident between all, treating them equally with, yeah, equal respect. And, you know, at Italia Conti, we had, you know, aristocracy, and we have people from council estates.
Yeah.
So you were really had a very broad, exposed to a broad range of people from a, yeah, broad range of society. And I really, really enjoyed it. It was very different to, I think, a normal school experience.
Right.
There was always a sort of a competitive element to one's friendships at school.
Uh-huh.
But I think I thrived in it, and I have very, very happy memories from my school. And I'm very grateful to my parents that they allowed me to do it. So I was actually, like, I think from about the age of 15, 14, 15, auditioning for parts and kind of in the business.
Yeah, brilliant. And were you at Italia Conti with anyone who we might know, might have heard of?
Well, yes, for sure. I was there with Bonnie Langford,
Right.
who went on to have an incredibly successful musical theatre career, who I have the absolute utmost admiration for. I actually saw her in a show recently, and at nearly 60 years old, she's still got it.
Yeah.
And Lina Zavaroni, who sadly died. Yeah, there were lots of other people that went on to do great and good things. I mean, it was at a miserable building in Clapham North at the time. I went from Elstree in Hertfordshire to Clapham North every day, which was a huge, it was like a 3 hour commute both ways.
Wow, right.
But I didn't even blink about it because that's where I wanted to go and that's what I wanted to do. And I'm very grateful to my parents that they let me do it.
Brilliant. And so when you said you were auditioning for different parts, was there any sort of work? Did you get much work in those early
I
days?
mean, I was sort of pottering through things. I think Grangehill was probably the first big thing that I did. In
Right.
fact, Grangehill was the first thing. I think I was 16 when I started
Yeah.
and did it for 2 seasons till I was 18. I was definitely playing down. So I was sort of 18 playing a 14-year-old
Yeah.
and 16 playing a, I don't know, maybe 12-year-old. But yeah, that was the big thing. But there was an agency attached to the school, so it was all very much part of your sort of schooling culture. The academic standard, which was sort of the thing that my parents thought the school would be very good for, was really very, very, it wasn't great.
Right,
I
okay.
mean, it was fine, but it
Yeah.
just wasn't great. And
Yeah.
in fact, since I stopped working the business, I've spent the last sort of 35 years making up for my sort of, I didn't go to university, and I've spent the last 35 years taking courses and, reading. I mean, I'm looking here at the whole wall behind where you're sitting now is books. And I'm a prolific reader, and I'm probably as well read as any of my friends who studied English literature at Oxbridge now.
Brilliant, brilliant.
So, and that has become one of life's great joys.
Yeah.
And so I've made up from that. We used to laugh. I mean, if she's listening now, and if she happens to hear this, I say this with the utmost respect, but our biology and French teacher was a lovely Cockney lady who used to speak French with a Cockney accent. And We had 4 classrooms. My children have been very lucky enough to go to fabulous schools. And I remember telling them often, we had 4 classrooms, little
Wow.
classrooms with the old-fashioned desks with the
Yeah.
ink wells and the lids at the top of the school. And that was it. I never studied a day of physics or chemistry. I think there were 7 or 8 subjects, and that was it. And I guess if you'd have worked really hard, you could have, we did okay.
Yeah.
But academia was definitely like the sort of add-on. We had our
Yeah.
vocational training, and then we went up and we did kind of geography and history and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, there we go.
Brilliant. And now
I
you.
don't regret it for 1 second, though.
Excellent. So you've just mentioned there that you were in Grangehill for 2 seasons. But when I was researching, you and Pamela, I found out that you were actually uncredited in one episode. I think it was series two as a girl in Changing Room. And some of the girls are having a chat. So there was Tricia and Mary and a few others. And you're there in shots for the whole conversation,
Yeah.
just folding your clothes and stuff
So
like
I think that was an extra part. I think that was
that.
just like an extra part. And they went to Italia Conti and said, we need a few girls. And I mean, that just turned
Yeah.
up for that. There were a few things that I did during my career, which were just like luck being in the right place at the right time, required zero talent, literally zero talent, other than maybe a bit of self-discipline and maybe looking the part, required zero talent, but I think that was one of them.
And one of those things then must have seen you get your face known around the world because you were the girl in Don't Stand So Close to Me, the music video of The Police. Now, that must have been incredible, just that as well, the fact that you got to, I mean, were you a fan of The Police? Were you a fan of Sting?
I mean, who wasn't?
Yeah.
Literally, who wasn't? You know, at that time, you watch Grange Hill and you listen to The Police.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those were like the two big things in your life.
Yeah.
So I will firstly tell you that getting that part was literally being selected from Spotlight, which is the actors'
Yeah.
catalogue. And they literally, now I'd like to think that they looked through the whole book and thought, she's the one.
Yeah.
But in all likelihood, they might have just flicked through 3 pages and thought, yeah, she looks all right. We'll have her.
Alphabetical, I'm guessing.
Alpine, there we go. I mean, yes, very likely. Thanks, Neil. So they just literally looked, and I was called in. It was actually filmed at Italia Conti. They used the because they needed a schoolroom and they needed some big space, and we had lots of studios and whatever. So we recorded there. To say I was beside myself, I'm not a very starstruck person. There have been a few people in my life that I've met where I've like hyperventilated at meeting them because they are such icons and they're just so special. But it's probably personal rather than, you know, somebody that everybody would find. You know, I'm diverting a bit here now, but I remember meeting Damian Lewis, who then starred in Homeland. Now, I thought it was the most brilliant series. And sorry, spoiler alert here, put your fingers in your ears if you haven't watched it and intend to. But at the end of, I think, the fourth series or maybe the third series, he is hung at the gallows in a Middle Eastern country, and it is absolutely devastating. They went on for another five series. There were eight series in total. I watched all of them. I thought it was a brilliant series. About 5 years ago, I was standing behind him in a queue waiting to pay for something, and he turned around, and I thought my heart was going to burst out of my chest. I wanted to go up and hug him and say, "You're alive. You're just here." It was just very over. So I kind of, when I walked in and saw Sting and Stuart Copeland and Andy Summers, who were the Police, who were really at the height of the beginning of their careers, I didn't want to. I think I probably tried to be a bit cool and just like didn't want to be too like groupies, starry-eyed. But it was an absolutely extraordinary experience, which then went on to be, now some of the people, your listeners may remember Top of the Pops, which was on every week, and you had the top 10 and the top 20. And Don't Stand So Close to Me was at number one for 12 weeks, I believe. The day after, so the week, I think it was on a Thursday night, Top of the Pops. When I went into school on Friday, the whole school literally, as I walked into the assembly, the whole school literally bowed down to me. But it was by far and away the most outstanding moment of my career. However, it required the least talent. It was by luck that I got it. But I loved doing it, and it was an amazing opportunity.
Did you get recognized from that?
No,
Right, okay.
no,
And
no. I mean, now though, if I mention it to people, they are on YouTube looking it up quicker than you can say Don't stand so close to me.
Yeah, I mean, and was there any sort of like bone of contention with like the subject matter of the song? Was there
Now,
anything
isn't
like
that
that?
interesting that you say that? I don't think it could be written today.
Right.
I think the, young teacher, a schoolgirl, it's his fantasy or whatever the
Yeah.
words were. I mean, it is absolutely, it's outrageous.
Yeah.
And I don't think it could be produced today.
Right.
But at the time, happily, in those days, there wasn't any wokeism, there wasn't any political correctness, which I've grown at endlessly now. And no, it there wasn't. There was, it was kind of, it was a song, and it was a brilliant song. And I feel very proud to have been associated with it, but really, it was just luck that I was there.
Okay. So then, so we'll move on then to Grange Hill. What was your sort of like your audition process for that? Was it just sort of the normal standard
You
thing?
know, yes, went in. I believe that on, I think I had three auditions,
Right.
and at one, Phil Redmond was there. And I kind of knew this was the guy that was behind it, that had devised it. And by the time when I went into it as Pamela Cartwright, it was already series three. It had already made a huge impact. It was very popular and very successful. I believe that my part replaced Penny
Yeah.
Lewis, who was played by Rudy Davis. I don't know if did you interview her?
Not yet. No.
Okay. She was actually at Italia Conti. She was in the
Right.
year below me. Amazing girl.
Yeah.
She was actually the daughter of the authoress Beryl Bainbridge.
Yeah.
And she lived this very kind of, I was just a little girl that grew up in Elstree, and she lived this very funky, cool life. They lived in Camden Town. They had this huge stuffed buffalo as you walk through the entrance hall. You had to kind of squeeze past to get in. It was all very kind of
Yeah.
bohemian and,
Brilliant.
writerish.
Yeah.
And she was in series one and two, and I believe that my part was supposed to kind of sort of replace her part.
Right.
And she and yeah and so I think I had three auditions
Right.
and then was told that I had the part. I don't remember it massively. I mean, we are talking about like 44 years
Yeah,
ago.
good while ago. Yeah.
So, and in fact, one of the reasons when you contacted me and said, would you come on and talk about Greg, I just thought it was like a lifetime ago. It was a different part of my life. It was a very happy part of my life. But like, who is going to be interested in hearing about what my life is now? But anyway,
Yeah, you'd be
I hope.
surprised. So in the very first scene that we see Pamela in, Pamela's with Susie, who a lot of your scenes were with Linda, who played Susie, but Justin and Christopher, and they get stopped by Mr. Thompson, the caretaker, because they were inside and they shouldn't have been, but because they work for the school magazine, they were allowed to stay in. And you've just mentioned there about Penny. Pamela and Susie then have a discussion about Penny because Penny hadn't officially left. She was off school. And at first, they didn't really say why she was off. It was just Susie went, she's going to be, her mum said it'll be a few weeks, but I don't know what's wrong with her. And that was, and then it never really got spoken about until a bit later on why she was off. But when you joined the program, were you already a fan? I know you've mentioned that you've watched it, but were you a big fan of the program?
I think I watched, I was explaining to my children about Grange Hill when they were, I've got three children who are all very grown up now. I was explaining, talking to them about Grange Hill, and I've got the recordings of all the series, the episodes and
Right.
the series that I did. And I was explaining to them at the time when Grange Hill was made, there were only three or four channels. So you did not have mobile phones. You did not have computers. You had three channels on the TV. And that was it. That was kind of what you could do if you wanted to watch something or listen to the radio. And I was trying to explain to them that Grange Hill was iconic. I think even by the end of the second series, it had become quite iconic. And you kind of just watched it. Everybody watched Grange Hill. You know, everybody, even now, if I mention to people, you know, it doesn't come up that often now, but if I mention to people, you know, that I was speaking to someone today and they, whatever you're doing this evening, I say, oh, I'm doing a Grange Hill. This is a serious academic person. This is somebody who is incredibly accomplished in his, who I had lunch with today, in his business world, in his, he is a brilliant, brilliant man. He's a doctor, he's a rabbi, he's an incredibly accomplished man. When I told him that I was doing this podcast night, because indeed I had appeared in Grange Hill, he was just like googly-eyed and just thought, it's just extraordinary. So I think I recognize that it was a really important TV show. And whilst it was only, and I say that in inverted commas, only about school life, I think it was quite revolutionary in the subject matter that it addressed. Perhaps not before I joined, perhaps not in the two series that I was in, but certainly subsequently. And I think that I'm actually really proud to have been part of it because I think Grange Hill addressed sex and drugs and rock and roll before it had really been addressed in a school with a school in the background, certainly like a comprehensive school, before anybody else. And I think that has been recognised. In fact, I believe that some of the cast members from subsequent series went to meet Michelle Obama at the White House, where they received some sort of award for bringing to the fore and to sort of public discourse these very difficult subjects, which absolutely subsequently became really very, very helpful for young people.
It was actually Nancy Reagan who they
Oh,
met
was it
in.
Nancy
It was
Reagan? That was
Nancy
Michelle Obama.
Reagan because of the Just Say No drugs campaign.
There we
That
go.
that's what that was there.
Yes.
Oh yeah, okay. So my sort of era of Grange Hill was from about 82. I knew about Grange Hill and I knew Tucker was. So when I've sort of revisited these things at the time, I always think Pamela Cartwright, good girl, clever girl, you know, academic girl. When I was researching your character, I thought she can be a little bit catty when she wants to, can't she? You know, she wasn't backwards and coming forward, shall we say. If she had an opinion on something, she was gonna let people know. And there's a bit where they're talking. It was Pamela decides they need to hold a meeting to discuss the fact that they weren't allowed in at lunchtime. I love this. She asked Tucker and his mates if they were going to come to the meeting. And Tucker said they had better things to do. And Pamela replied with, well, let's hope it stays that way. And I just love that.
I mean, I can't remember a lot of the lines, but I do remember she was always going to a meeting. There was always a council meeting, or there was another meeting, and she was always organising and getting everybody. And I just thought this girl is going to go on to become do something very powerful.
Brilliant, brilliant. And there'd been like a spate of vandalism in the school. And Pamela again is talking with some of her friends and some of the lads as well about who've been doing it. And she said the boys should have an idea of who it was because they were boys. And you know, like it's just like they should have an idea who it was because they're the boys and so they must have an idea. And then she
Oh, you couldn't write that in a script
No,
now,
but then
could you?
she said, well, I didn't mean it. I just because boys are a bit more boisterous. So, you know, it's likely to be one of them.
Very controversial.
But it then led on to a conversation then about Tucker saying, He would have had a bet that it was Booger Benson. If we all remember Booger Benson, who was the bully at the time, and David Lynch, who played Booger, has actually been on the podcast, and you couldn't get a more different character than Booger Benson. David's great, but they have a conversation then about if Tucker could throw Alan in judo. He said it was a waste of time because you couldn't give someone a smack in the mouth. And again, Pamela says that Tucker didn't need to worry about that because nobody had a fist big enough to fit in Tucker's mouth.
She was extremely acerbic to
Yeah,
work
I mean,
in.
because outside of Grange Hill, Todd Carthy was like, he was a massive heartthrob, wasn't he? And because he was Grange Hill, wasn't he? It was like Tucker was sort of the character.
Completely.
But on Grange
Completely.
Hill, Tucker Jenkins had no luck with the girls whatsoever. And I love the fact that he did that. I love the fact that he never seemed to have a girlfriend, did he? We saw countless times, there was times when he tried to ask Pamela Cartwright out, but he always, he would change his mind about at the last minute and not do it. And there was a time where the school disco was going to get cancelled because of the vandalism, and Tucker had caught Booger and Gilbo Booger's mate vandalizing the school, and so he told on them, and they got caught, and the disco went ahead. Yeah, so the disco actually happens, and Pamela told Tricia and Penny that they'd have to thank, or Tricia and Susie, sorry, that they'd have to thank Tucker for saving the disco. But they didn't really want to do that because it was Tucker Jenkins, and they
Completely.
didn't really care for him. But
Completely.
Tucker's trying to hide from Mr. Baxter at one point, so he grabs Pamela for a dance, which I thought, maybe he's going to ask her out, but he didn't. And later on, Alan asked Tucker if he would walk Pamela home because that meant Alan could walk Susie home. And Tucker's response was, "Well, do I have to?" And you just think, mate, your chance is there. Why aren't you taking it? But as they were leaving, that's when we saw Booger Benson coming in. And I don't even remember much about that because Tucker got quite a beating from Booger Benson at that
Yes.
point. I don't know if you remember much about
Yes.
that or if you have any particular stories or anything like that. Because when I was speaking to David Lynch, who played Booger, he said there wasn't really, there was a little bit of sort of choreography, but not a great deal. I thought, but I.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember the absolute details. I kind of do remember that Tucker had a thing for Pamela,
Yeah.
and she kind of made a few hideous comments to him. Absolutely crushing. And yeah, I mean, I know it was Neil, it was a long
Yeah,
time
no,
ago.
don't worry.
I mean, when you're talking to, I can kind of visualize the scenes and
Yeah.
I can visualize this, I can kind of remember ish what I was wearing, but
Yeah.
I don't remember the great
Well, I
details
mean,
about
the
it.
thing with Booger Benson, that scene when they're walking down the corridor and he appears, he is terrifying. He's absolutely terrifying in that
Yeah.
scene. And it's like, where do you think you're going? And you just, even now when I watch it, like, I'm nearly 50 and I watch it and I think, oh my God, he's so good. He was
Yeah.
so good at it. He was so menacing. Now, you've mentioned there again about Pamela always going off to meetings and stuff. And she joined the school magazine and thought her and Tricia should work together for better school meals because Tricia was on the school council. So Tricia went round to Pamela's house to discuss it, and everyone says that one of the main reasons Grange Hill was so popular, as you said as well, was because of the way it handled real topics. And this one's quite prevalent today, is where Tricia actually says some kids need a big meal during the day because they don't get one when they go home. And
Yeah.
you just think of blimey, for a kids program to be addressing that in 1981.
Amazing.
It's unreal, isn't it? And you talk
Amazing.
about like the big storylines it has, but even something as small and throwaway like that, for that to be getting said,
Absolutely.
that to be
I
getting
couldn't
covered.
agree with you more. I think those were the things that really got it attracted people's interest.
Yeah,
And there
definitely.
was so much that you could, there was everybody all the characters, there was somebody that you could relate to.
Yeah, definitely. So they decided that they would conduct a survey to see what type of meals the children wanted. And this is the type of thing that because Trisha was doing it on a typewriter, right? And again, Pamela's tongue.
Trish was just wonderful.
Yeah.
She was just wonderful. She was just, I mean, she was so well cast.
Yeah.
And she was just like, she was like the female icon of Grange Hill.
Yeah. Oh, can I ask though, who were your sort of best friends when you were filming it then?
I mean, I didn't have best friend. I took it quite seriously.
Right.
I was like friendly to everybody. There was one lighting cameraman that kind of took me under his wing and was just incredibly helpful and very kind to me. You know, you've got to remember, you're working at the BBC, who are doing these things all day, every day, and you have got a cast which is essentially full of kids. And they were incredibly forgiving. So because they knew that for a lot of us, it was our first big TV thing, they were very understanding. I think the majority of people who work, I remember it being a very professional environment, and you know, all the actors taking it very seriously, even the extras, you know, quite, especially as it was Grange Hill and it was such a sort of iconic program to be working on. But I just remember this. I wish I could remember his name, but I can't. But he was a lighting cameraman, and he told me, gave me some great advice, and was incredibly helpful. And you know, said to me, you know what, Renee? I remember him. One of the things he said to me was, just be nice to everyone, because today's runner can be tomorrow's director. And just, I think, instinctively, I was nice to everyone, but I listened to that. You know, don't be a prima donna. Don't be a, you know, you're not so great. You're just another human being, and everyone's a human being. And that actually has stayed with me for life. The other, you know, the people on the show were good. Linda Slater, who played Susie, was fabulous, and we were at school together. We knew each other from school. And I actually went on holiday. I had my first holiday after I finished the second series of Grange Hill. I had my first holiday without my parents with three of the girls from Grange Hill. And that was in Ibiza. And that was a
Brilliant.
big eye-opener. That
Imagine.
was growing up. That was proper
Yeah.
growing up. But there was a great sense of, I'm sure everybody who you've interviewed from Grange Hill will tell you, there was a great sense of camaraderie. I think we were all felt we were part of something that was, you know, a big success.
Yeah.
And I think everyone felt a sense of responsibility.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. So, you know, and we said there about the survey, and Trisha was typing, and again, Pamela's acerbic tongue coming out saying, "Well, you're not very fast, are you?" You know,
She was really snotty. She was very snotty, and she had no patience for anybody, and she just wanted to get done what she wanted to get done.
Well, I mean, I love the fact that when they did the survey, it was Mrs. McCluskey who said she was happy with what they'd done, and you know, she would review the situation after they'd had the results of the survey. And Gwyneth Powell, who played Mrs. McCluskey, I always talk about it because she came on the podcast a few months before she sadly passed away, and she was just the nicest person. She was so nice. And we stayed in touch afterwards, and like she'd message me on my birthday and stuff like that, you know, just little things like that. She was just the
She was
nicest.
lovely. I mean, I remember her being a really lovely, warm person. And I actually thought, really good actress. I remember watching her and actually looking at her and thinking, how is she doing this?
No, she was something else. Like, now there's another bit where we've just talked about like covering like serious issues and stuff, and there's a bit where Pamela and Susie had a conversation which seemed to be about Pamela had seen Andrew Stanton buying and drinking alcohol, and again in a kids program, that's just unheard of, isn't it? You know, And he was later found drunk in that episode. And in that same conversation, going back to Penny Lewis, we find out that Penny Lewis wasn't in school because she was in a cast. She fell attempting a triple bar and was in a cast. And again, Pamela said, "Well, she's only got herself to blame, hasn't she, for doing that?" So,
She really was a very warm, fuzzy person,
just
wasn't she?
the compassion was just running through her body there, she's always trying things that were beyond her. That was was another thing that got said. And like we said about Tucker, always seems to have had a thing for Pamela. And there's a bit where you think he's going to ask her out, but he goes all and he and in the end he just says, "Can you tell Mr. Hopwood that Andrew Stanton's going to be off for a few days?"
I think I remember, I mean, I don't remember a huge amount of the script or what happened, but I do remember there was a scene where I was in a queue for lunch, and he overheard me saying, in response to somebody saying, something like, I mean, this is, do you fancy Tucker? And she and Pamela, and I think I replied something like, oh my God, I'd rather walk over hot coals than go out with him.
Susie was telling Pamela that Tucker fancied her. And Pamela said she'd rather go out with Penny Lewis's pony. What was the response? She would rather go out with
There we
Penny
go.
Lewis's
Okay.
pony than go out with Tucker. But
There we
yeah,
go.
no, there was a bit where Pamela was talking to Susie about it, and Pamela hinted at the fact that she was a bit jealous of the fact that Susie was going out with Alan, or at least they'd had a letter had been left in Susie's locker or Susie's desk from Alan, but it was actually Tucker and Tommy had written it. But Pamela was a little bit jealous because she said that no one ever seemed to ask her out, and I just thought that was good. They were showing sort of Pamela's insecurities as well about it. She thought there was something wrong with her. And one of the reasons that she thought no one was asking her out was because, and I love this, it's such a first world problem. She had to muck out the horse's stables, and she thought that lads thought she might smell. And I just think that it's such a kid thing to
It's so
say,
much a
isn't
teenage issue, isn't it?
it? Yeah. Now there's a bit where again,
But I think, sorry to interrupt,
no,
Neil,
not a
but
problem.
I think that's where Grange Hill was such a success, because through this brilliant script, or this very simple script, but I think excellent script, it voiced things that teenagers were thinking, and kids could relate to it.
Definitely,
And I'm
definitely.
sure there must have been thousands of incidents where kids were thinking, yeah, that's me thinking that, and that's my concern, that's my insecurity.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll be honest, there was times as a lad growing up where I'd go and think, right, I'm going to ask this girl out, but you'd say something completely different, and it never ever materialized, And there's a bit where Pamela and Susie were talking about their options. And Pamela had said, whatever they chose, her dad had said that would decide what they would do in the future, whether they'd get a job or whether they'd go to university. Now, whenever I'm putting an episode of the podcast out, I do a guess the guest competition on social media. Or the first person to guess who the next guest is then gets asked to ask a question to the following guest in the following
Did somebody
episode.
guess that I was going to be the next
No.
guest?
So this was for Kim Benson for the last episode,
Right.
but so this question's coming for you for this one. So it's someone called Tammy Ann. Now Tammy Ann, whenever we do this competition, she just comments, "I've got no clue. I've got no clue who this is." But on the last one, she was the very first person on the very first day. She guessed. She said this could be Kim Benson, who played Mary Johnson, and she was right. So
Right.
her question is, bearing in mind what we've just said about the fact that, about going to university, her question is, what do you think Pamela would have done at university? What do you think she would have studied at university?
That's a great question. I mean, because she was such an organizer and she was sort of, I think she would have studied international relations.
Right. Okay.
I think that probably would have, or because she was so interested in so many things,
Yeah.
she might have studied theology
Right.
because you've got everything from religion to history to geography to literature to philosophy. I would have said either international relations, because she is going to go out, and I would have thought ultimately Pamela would have become a diplomat of some sort. But I think theology would have also interested her because she had so many interests, and I think she was quite smart.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Now, there was a thing towards the end of that series, or in the last episode, where there was a battle of the sexes
Oh,
competition. Now that all came about because Doyle, he wasn't very likable, was he? But he'd stolen one of the younger girls' bags. He'd stolen Precious' bag, and Pamela was trying to get it back, and in the end, Tucker and his mates got it back, and Tucker made a comment about the girls being the weaker sex. So there was this battle of the sexes, and you were involved in the netball match. And when you watched that, you actually scored quite a few. You had like quite a good aim on your day. Was netball your thing?
That's really interesting. I mean, so my father was a really good sportsman,
Right.
and it became very apparent early on that I wanted to sing and dance, and I did ballet and jazz and contemporary and tap and just like every form of dance that you could do. But I think that somewhere, and my mother was a ballet dancer, and my father was a great footballer.
Right.
And he actually played for his country, South Africa,
Well,
not nationally, but for a in a but sort
yeah.
of a special league. And I mean, I'd like to think some of it passed down, but actually, when I think about my hand-eyeball coordination
Yeah.
in kind of games like tennis and whatever, it wasn't great.
Right.
So I think. The thing is that I would have a really good go at anything.
Yeah.
So that's probably what came through. I have, since I've like been the year from the year dot, I've always enjoyed exercise in some way. And it's still a huge part of my life, and really important and fundamental. Like, I don't know, some people, whatever they have to do every day, I have to exercise.
Right.
It's just like, really, if I don't, it's a
Yeah.
problem. But so I was kind of thinking, well, maybe yes, netball, some sort of history, but not really, no. I
Right.
mean,
Okay.
yeah.
I mean, and then in Sue Grange Hill fashion, the Battle of the Sexes was declared a draw, obviously. And that moves us on to the Christmas special was on a Christmas in 1981. Now, this is the very first episode I can remember watching. I must have watched it. I must have watched Grange Hill before, but I remember this. This was written by a Blue Peter competition winner, this one. And when you watch it back through adult eyes, it's so obvious that it was filmed at a different time to the rest of the series because everybody looks different. Everyone's got different hairstyles and everyone looks older and
Was this
things.
part of which series was this
So
part
this was
of?
sort of the end of it series for your first series, but it was so it would have been series four, I think, was your first one, and that would have been on at the start. And then so it was at the end of the year, so it was at 1981 Christmas. And as I say, it was written by a Blue Peter competition winner. And Tucker was still watching Pamela from afar, even though he told the lads that she'd have no chance with him. Now, just as an aside, when I was watching it the other day, the entrance fee for the disco in 1981 was 75 pence. And that included one drink and one sausage or one cracker. Now, I don't know if that's a Christmas cracker or a Jacob's cracker. I don't know. But anyway, and Tommy had told Pamela that she needed to put an order in for a dance with him before the rush. And Pamela told him it was a good job, he told her, because she might have made a mistake and waited for him and then dropped two full cans of Coke on his feet and walked away.
Oh,
But
such a meanie.
during the disco, Baggy Trousers by Madness is playing in the background, which,
Oh,
by the
no.
way,
God.
Best band in the
Oh my
world. Best
gosh.
band in the world ever, bar none. That's playing. But then Tucker looks around the disco and he sees Pamela being asked to dance, and the music changes in Tucker's head from Baggy Trousers to to Miss You Nights by Cliff Richard. And I think as the music actually changed, but then Benny starts talking to Tucker and Baggy Trousers comes back in. So just showing that Tucker's still got
There we
those
go.
feelings for Pamela, and he still didn't ask her out. And then it's just your last series 5, and you were only in one episode in this series, and it was when Pamela's brother Matthew had brought home a letter about sex education that his class were doing, and
Right.
we saw Pamela at home with her mum and dad as well.
Yes, I remember that. I remember that.
And people who have been on always say when they got like a family in Grange Hill, it was so good and so different, because obviously the set was different, but it actually sort of gave the character a like sort of a more rounded feel to
Yeah.
it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, completely.
Would you, right?
Completely. I mean, it was very the Grange Hill for me, most of it. I didn't do very much in a home setting.
Yeah.
Most of it was at the school. But there were two very different locations where we filmed. So we were either in the studio at
Yeah.
BBC, at the BBC in White City, or we were out on location at a school location. So there were two very different settings. Did that make a difference? I mean, I don't remember it feeling all oh, this is a an added dimension. No.
Right. Okay. And Matthew didn't really want to do sex education, because Matthew, being the way Matthew was, he was, you know, he was quite sort of immature in many respects compared to what Pamela was. And Pamela
Yeah.
had a bit of a go about him about being embarrassed about it.
Yes, and
And then,
I remember that. I remember the family was quite sort of square and sort of middle class
yeah.
and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I say that, but I also thought that Mr. Cartwright looked like he could look after himself if it was necessary, because he's a really, really tall bloke, and he just looks like if anyone was to get on the wrong side of him, you know, he's going to let them know. I remember he looked quite different to what I imagined Mr.
Yes.
Cartwright would have done.
Yes.
And then we never saw Pamela Cartwright again after that. Now, yeah, it was. I think it was series 5, and it was the 5th series. And I know they were bringing in other sorts of characters, but it just seems strange that these, you know, being the most famous kids in Britain, and these just sort of faded out of Grange Hill.
I mean, there was no explanation.
No.
There was a, I mean, you know, each series I think was 18 episodes. There was quite a lot, and it was kind of an it was would if I would have been offered another series, I'm sure I would have carried on
Yeah.
with it, because who turns down Grange
Yeah.
Hill? But for me, two series, I really felt like I got the most that I could out of it, and I learnt. I'm so grateful to have been able to do it, because I think to have had that as your first sort of really big
Yeah.
role, with the understanding of the sort of technical people, because the majority of the cast were kids, and the immense sort of sense of pride, because it was such a sort of a national icon that you were working on. It was the most wonderful experience. It really was, and it was a real privilege to have taken part in it, and especially subsequently, and looking back at, you know, how successful it continued to be,
Yeah.
and actually more meaningfully, the impact that it had
Yeah. Definitely.
on the audience.
Yeah. And what was the public reaction to you and Pamela like?
So yeah, that's a funny question. So well, so probably about 4 or 5 months in, I literally couldn't go anywhere without being recognized.
Wow.
And half the time it was just like I'd be, you know, I was traveling to and from the tube, virtually the whole length of the Northern Line every day, from My father would drop me from L Street to Edgware Station, and I'd go from Edgware down to Clapham North. And invariably, there would be some kids on the train, and they'd start saying, "Is that her? Is that her? That's her. That's her, isn't it? That's her." And sometimes I'd say, "Yeah, it's me. It's me." And you know, to and I literally couldn't go anywhere without being recognised, probably for 2 years afterwards as
Wow,
well.
right.
And in fact, I went to the theatre. I remember when Cats first opened in the West End, and I went to see the production, and I literally could not get out of the bathroom in time for the curtain up in the second act because there were so many school kids there who were saying,
Wow.
"Oh, Pamela, can I have your autograph? It's so nice to see." I mean, it was sweet and it was lovely. And you know what? I think to have that the whole time must be really,
Yeah.
really challenging. You know, you stand in the front line and you have to expect the risk reactions. But it was certainly was a very long, there was, you know, probably about 3 or 4 years. And then I had something hilarious happen subsequently. This was years later, probably about 20 years later. We were skiing and we were staying at this little hotel, and we had a lovely day skiing, showered, came down to the bar, went up to the bar, and it was in France. There was an English chap working behind the bar. He said, "Excuse me, have to ask you, were you Pamela Cartwright in Grange Hill?" And I looked around and I just thought, no, I don't believe it. I am look so completely different. This is completely out of context. And of course, a friend of ours who was notoriously always like, you know, would come into my house and take the Grange Hill books off the shelf and say, "Oh, Pamela, Pamela," had gone up to this barman and said to him, "Do me a favor, when my friend comes down, I'll show you who she is. Ask if she's Pamela Cartwright from Grange Hill." Well, it was hilarious. It was a really, really good one. Yeah.
Brilliant.
So yes, definitely, I definitely had a moment of fame. And
Yeah.
it was interesting. But actually, ultimately, I think it must be really, really, all
Yeah.
joking aside, really difficult
Yeah.
not to be able to go anywhere anonymously.
Yeah. I mean, it must be daunting as well for you to just suddenly be have that thrust upon you as well. It must, as you said, it must be really challenging as well.
For me, because it was limited to sort of 4 years, it was novel and it was very, and it was like, and it was all associated with such a wonderful production and such a great program. And it was, you know, it was a very happy association, but I think to go through that, you know, people who are very high profile in the public eye to have that all the time,
Yeah.
I don't think that can be underestimated.
Okay. And so then, so after Grange Hill, I looked, and I always say about IMDb, I know it's not the most reliable, but there's not a great deal for you on IMDb, but there is an episode of Marmalade Atkins, Marmalade at Work. And it's about when she goes to a famous, like, you know, like a theater school, and it's the kids from Shame rather than, as opposed to the kids from Fame, and you were one of the kids at the school. And the cast list for that episode was, when I was looking through it, was is unreal, because you know you had John Baird and Callum McCreadie, you were in every episode because they were their mum and dad. But then to have Jim Carter in there and Elizabeth,
Jim
Jim
Carter,
Carter,
that I mean, he's a legend.
you know, Elizabeth Estenson and Danny John-Jules is there, Michael Sunden and Tracy, and there's all these people just in it. I mean, that must have been an experience, because obviously you were already established then, but you know, when you look back and the fact that you've worked with those people as well, that
I
must
know,
be.
amazing, 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 amazing.
And
I mean, yeah, and it was a great, it was a, you know, although it was really a children's program, you know, you're working with great legends, and yes, that was a really thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable job.
I mean, I looked for that episode, and there's one clip, and it's the finale, the song and dance routine at the end.
Yeah.
And again,
I
watch.
mean, that was actually, sorry to interrupt
No,
you,
it's all right.
that was my favorite thing. My thing that
Right.
I love Grange Hill, I love the work that I did, I really enjoyed the work. But my thing was big belty theatre numbers.
Yeah.
I was an actress, I was a dancer who could sing and act. So my thing that I loved more than anything, and sometimes I'll go to the theatre and I will see a big belty full-on number, and that's what I loved. That is what I enjoyed so much, and that was me. And I was fortunate enough. I did lots and lots of pantomimes.
Right.
Now it sounds silly, and it sounds like it is silly, and you know, but we always had great cast members. There was always a huge sense of fun and the big belty dance numbers. Generally, I work with really great choreographers, and you know, there were always sort of like, you know, celebrities and fun cast members, and the standard was very high and people took it seriously. But because it was pantomime, there was always a huge element of fun. And for me, my favorite work was big, belty, blasty dance numbers. And you know, now I've got very musical children, one
Yeah.
of whom loves Bach chorales,
Right.
and they take always all took their music very, very seriously. But for me, those big, belty musical numbers are my absolute favorite.
Yeah, and that one in that program, right? As I say, that's the only clip is that sort of the big finale. And I have to warn people, if you're gonna go and watch that, that's gonna get stuck in your head because for the last few days, I've just been singing "Even a Bad Guy," and I'm like, "Where is that?" You know, it honestly, I've only watched it two or three times, but honestly, "Even a
Yes.
Bad Guy," oh, you need to stop.
Yeah.
But on that, because you know, as a kid watching that, you know, it's Marmalade Atkins, she's a naughty schoolgirl. When you watch that through adult eyes and you look at Charlotte Coleman in that, and she is unbelievable.
Yes.
I watched it and I just thought
Yeah.
she's unbelievable in that because, as I say, you just assume she's, you know, as a kid, you're watching a naughty schoolgirl, but then when you watch it again as an adult, you just think she was absolutely incredible. So that was that. But then was Tucker's Luck never an option?
That didn't ever really come up.
Right.
That didn't really ever come up.
No.
I mean, I think shortly after I finished Marmalade Atkins, I also did a series of commercials, which was also dancing, which I've got to say was really my favorite thing,
Right.
for a company called Kinney Shoes, which were the NBA, National Basketball Association, kind
Right.
of sponsored shoes, and they spent a fortune on a series of commercials, which I was in all of them. It was without question the best paid thing that I ever did,
Right, okay.
and that was really good fun. And I did that, and then I auditioned for there was an actor called Gerald Harper,
Right.
who was very he was very famous for he was always typecast as sort of like the English country gentleman.
Right.
And he very entrepreneurially had set up a company called Intercontinental Entertainment, which took plays to the Far East and Middle East to entertain expatriates who were starved of culture in the Far East and the Middle East. And he took three plays out there every year to entertain these people. So they would go into very smart five-star hotels, take over the ballrooms, make a theatre, and people would come in and have a sort of black tie dinner and then watch one of these plays. And so, no, sorry, it wasn't Gerald Harper that did it. It was Derek Nimmo. Do you remember
Oh, Derek
Derek
Nimmo,
Nimmo?
yeah.
Derek Nimmo. Sorry, Gerald Harper was in the play, but
Right.
Derek Nimmo, who always played the sort of priest
Yeah,
in the sort of
that's
the
what I
old,
picture. I picture a
yeah,
priest when I think
exactly.
of Derek
Sorry.
Nimmo, yeah.
Gerald Hough was in the play. So I auditioned for him for a Terence Frisby play called There's a Girl in My Soup.
Right.
And I got the part of Paola, the au pair. And we toured 16 countries in the Far East and the Middle East. I think I was, this was about a year or two after I finished Grange Hill for 6 months. Now, whilst I'd, had some great experiences, we hadn't traveled a huge amount while I was growing up. And here I was, this like 19-year-old schnip, being taken first class to stay in the most fabulous hotels in, I think it was 16, 17, 18 countries in the Far East and Middle East, from Hong Kong, Bangkok, Kuala Lumpur, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Indonesia, Kuala Lumpur, Egypt, eating in the most fabulous restaurants, whereas I'd grown up eating in sort of Wimpy's and fish and chips, and flying first class around the world in this fabulous play with some really great actors and actresses. And that's probably the thing that I enjoyed most. Not so much, I mean, the play was great. There were some great people, and Bill Maynard was in it, and Gerald Harper was in it. There were some really great people in it. And but just the opportunity to travel so far and wide, and was immense. And I absolutely loved doing that. That was really, and then by the time I got back from that, I was dating my husband, and after 6 months apart, he said, "Listen, I would really like, I think we should have a future together. And I don't think we can do it very successfully if you're going to go off for 6 months at a time." And the truth is, with the business, you have to be committed to doing this sort of thing, because unless you are, George Clooney, you can't choose what you want to do all the time. So, it wasn't going to, and I ultimately knew that a family life was going to be more important to me than anything. And so, yeah, and so that was the end of the road on the stage.
So, what do you do now?
So what do I do now? So I've spent the last 45 years trying to make up for the very poor education I had at Italian
It's
Conti,
okay.
which I haven't done too badly with, having studied history of art, read a huge amount, studied sort of English literature, done a sort of some theology, lots of theology courses. And my family and friends are way, and by far the most important part of my life. They are just kind of who I am and what's important to me, and everything else is a very distant second. In fact, I'm hoping that in 8 weeks' time I'm going to become a grandma for the first time, which, as I'm saying it, I'm thinking, what are you even talking about? How can that be you? Don't be ridiculous. But I'm 60 this year, and our eldest son, we have three very beautiful children, and our eldest son and his wife are expecting their first baby in 8 weeks. So that is who I am. That's the core of who I am, and everything else is a very far distance. A second dis second comes in a second place. I've always done voluntary work and charity work. I'm a trustee of a very wonderful charity called Stand With Us, that helps to teach kids on campus and in high school how to deal with anti-Semitism and Israel advocacy, positive Israel advocacy, which is never more relevant than, sadly, than now. But I think we're doing a really good job, and our reach is far and wide. And I'm involved in several other organizations similar to that. And I have we I love traveling, and I love reading, and yeah,
Brilliant.
that's kind of my life now. And actually, when you asked me what to come onto the show, we've talked a lot about Grange Hill and about the sort of the details of it, which has been hugely nostalgic. But I kind of thought, well, who's interested in what I'm doing now, really, now? I think I've got a very fabulous, interesting life, but I'm
Yes.
not sure that anyone else would. But I do get it because I know how iconic Grangehill was.
Yeah.
And I guess in the same way that, you know, I might be interested to hear about other characters that have been on Grangehill, I guess it's the same thing. But interestingly enough, I have been asked on multiple occasions to go on to Grangehill reunion
Yeah.
interviews, to go on to, you know, BBC reunion, old Grangehill reunion, and I've always kind of rejected it, thinking it feels like, as I think I said to you the first time that I spoke to you, it feels like another lifetime.
Yeah.
It feels like, you know, when, I don't know if you know, if your listeners know, when you meet somebody from years ago that was like in a completely different part of your life,
Yeah.
it kind of takes you back in a way that is almost, you kind of have an out-of-body
Yeah.
experience.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's been really lovely talking about it, but it does feel like it was a different life.
But are you still in touch with any of the cast now?
No.
Right.
No, I mean, so I think when I stopped working in the business, it's a really, really interesting business. So my daughter was went to was desperate to do something, and she was asked to audition for Matilda when she was 11, and I said, no, you're going to go to school. Of course, you know, it's so interesting that as a parent, we kind of use all the delicious parts of our parents' parenting, and we reject the parts they don't. So my mother was told she couldn't go to a, you know, join the Royal Ballet School. And so as a result, she let me go to Italia Conti. I saw how tough the business was, and it is tough. And it, you know, it wasn't all fabulous and gorgeous. You know, there are some very insecure people in it who are very competitive, and, you know, it's not all fabulous and glamorous, as I'm sure everybody knows. So I said to my daughter, so when you finished university, if you still want to go and act and sing and dance, and she's actually incredibly talented, you can do that. So, you know, it's very interesting how you change things according to your experiences. Yeah, but yeah, it's a fabulous business, but it's incredibly challenging.
Okay. Well, Renee, we are sort of coming towards the end of the interview, but I'm going to ask you the same few questions that I always ask at the end of every episode. So, in the last sort of 12 months or so, there's been talk in the news of a Grangehill movie in the works. You know, Phil Redmond is writing it. Sarah Sugarman is going to be directing it. But what do you think of the idea of a Grangehill movie?
I mean, why not? Why not? Why not? I mean, even if it is, I'm sure that if Phil Redmond's got anything to do with it, it's going to be a great success, because Phil Redmond was he's just a complete legend, and he was brilliant. And, you know, he's not only proved himself with Grangehill, but with many other, you know, television legends. So I think if he's got anything to do with it, it'll be a success. But actually, why not? I mean, one film. You know, it was so iconic, and I think it's so nostalgic for so many people.
Yeah,
I
definitely.
can't tell you the number of people, when I tell them that I was in Grange, it puts a huge smile on their face. They really, my God, I watched Grange, and I don't even recognize you. I don't know, I can't remember it, but it was huge. So yeah, why not?
Brilliant. And if you were asked, would we see a return of Pamela Cartwright?
Why not?
Yes, that's what we want to hear. That's
Why
what we
not?
want to hear. Brilliant. Okay, so then, other than Pamela Cartwright, who was your favourite character in Grangehill?
I mean, I loved Trish. I just loved Trish. I loved her kind of raw Cockney accent. I love her sort of like irreverent look at life. And her, I loved her eye rolling, and I just, yeah, I thought she was great. I really loved her. I mean, obviously Tucker. One has to only look up to, you know, Todd Carter for creating this role that, I mean, literally every single person that you would meet of my age would remember Tucker Jenkins.
Yeah, definitely. And if you couldn't have played Pamela, is there another character who you would have liked to have played then?
I mean, I really felt that I was cast very well.
Yeah.
No, I think that I was, no, I think I was well cast for Pamela. I think I was really it was very cast. In fact, funnily enough, when I remember I was let home, I was told that I could go home from school early for the first episode of
Right.
the first series that I was in. They let me go because it was a theatre school, you know, it was quite
Yeah.
a big deal. And I remember going home and watching it, and I don't know what I was expecting. I think I was expecting some kind of great Shakespearean performance. And it was Grange Hill. Oh, I mean, it was Grange Hill, you know, it was Grange Hill in a very where everyone was wearing the same uniform and
Yeah.
Mrs. McCarthy, and it was like a school on the screen.
Yeah.
And I was a bit devastated that it was kind of something more Oscar worthy.
I mean, you can only work with what you're given, can't you? You know. Okay, so the final question is then, why do you think there's still such affection for Grange Hill?
I mean, I think we've probably covered that. I just think that it was so widely watched, it was became so iconic that it addressed these issues that just hadn't been addressed before. And I think for a series to have lasted such a long time, you know, there's really only a handful of them. You know, Coronation Street, EastEnders, Neighbours. I mean, you know, Crossroads. Do you remember Crossroads? You know, I just think, and I think more than anything, because it was the first like really brave television program about school, and it was so cutting edge in its subject matter. I think it's probably still people who are sort of like maybe 6 years older than me and 10 years younger than me, maybe in that age group, still feel a great nostalgia for it. And also because it was there was so little else. I mean, not so little else,
Yeah,
but
no,
it
you
wasn't.
mean,
Now the competition is so vast. You know, you talk about a television program, which might be amazing, but you've never heard of. Whereas everybody had heard of Grange Hill because there was so little available to watch. So it was quite unique.
I mean, it's interesting you've just said the ages there. That's probably the biggest demographic of listeners for this podcast is the age range that you've just
Right,
said there.
so from 50 to 65.
Yeah, so from
Yeah.
just from about that, that's probably the biggest demographic that we
Yes.
get. And you just said there about the topics and whatever that it covered. And I always say that that was a reason why a lot of kids weren't allowed to watch because of what it covered. But that was one of the reasons why I think my parents let me watch it because of the topics that it covered. And then
Yes.
I wasn't scared to ask about stuff
Yes.
after that
Well,
because
that's
I,
beautiful. That's beautiful. I mean, that's the most positive thing that came out of it, is that it, you know, opened up subjects and
Definitely.
helped, you know, helped sort of grey areas that had not of sort of difficulty that hadn't been addressed. And we've seen that subsequently over the last 40 years where, you know, child abuse and mental health issues are now a much more common topic of conversation in sort of the you know open forums, and we've seen the results and how healthy it is. So I think Grange Hill really was quite cutting edge
Definitely.
and groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking is the phrase that everyone says, it
Yes.
really, really was.
Yes.
It really,
Yeah.
really was brilliant.
Oh, it's been very nostalgic, Neil, I must say. I really
Well,
have felt very nostalgic talking about it all. Happy days.
I mean, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh,
I don't know if you know, but I don't think I've stopped smiling the entire time that we've been having this conversation. It's been great talking to you. And like we say, it's been a long time coming, this one, because it was, what, 18 months ago when when Lance first got in touch with me, so it's been great.
I mean, I know that we have things that came up that got in the way, but honestly, for the first few months, I just thought, who? I mean, it was such a long time ago. Having now spoken to you for however long we've been speaking, I recognise how it was huge. It was huge, and I really feel very proud to have been part of it.
No, well, honestly, thank you so once again. Thank you so much for coming on. I've loved talking to you. It's been brilliant hearing about your experiences. It really, really has. So,
really, really my pleasure. Really my pleasure.
Well, yeah, thank you so much. And to anyone that's listening, I'll speak to you next time. Cheers. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.